Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is the true story of an elite heart surgeon and his devoted wife.
Karen and David were high school sweethearts. There was no doubt that he loved Karen.
And the senseless tragedy that tears their marriage apart.
And when the gun went off, it went through her spinal cord back here.
It's the story of a bright, sexy young nurse.
Stephanie was very popular. Homecoming queen, beauty pageant contestant.
Boundless desire.
His dreams were being fulfilled. Sexually, let me say that.
And baffling mystery.
I don't know if I've got a homicide, if I've got a suicide, if I've got an accident. I don't know.
Beware. Extreme passion can lead to shocking consequences. It's the summer of 1994 in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, a quintessential southern town.
We believe in God, family, and what that stands for. Character, integrity. Everyone is caring and cares about each other.
Most people know each other, and if not, their friends do.
It's very rare you go through a day that you don't see five or six or seven or more people that you know.
One of the town's most notable residents is a man by the name of David Stevens, an extremely successful heart surgeon and a pillar of the community.
David was about 6 feet, 200 pounds, very dashing-looking guy, very certain in his manner, very funny, very intelligent.
David wasn't just well-respected as a cardiovascular surgeon. He was well-liked on the streets, at the shopping mall, at the country club. Everybody knew him and liked him.
But David isn't just any heart surgeon. He was the first one in the entire region.
That was a huge deal because there was no heart surgeon in this part of the state. Having a surgeon like that was like a rock star that lived among us.
David has been married to his wife, Karen, for 34 years. And now that their two kids are grown and out of the house, they've become fixtures at the luxurious Hattiesburg Country Club.
Karen and David were high school sweethearts. There was no doubt that he loved Karen, and she loved him dearly. David was Karen's life. He was her everything.
Thanks for coming out to the club with us.
She was just wonderful and would do anything for anybody.
But being the leading heart surgeon in this small town also means David spends most of his time at the hospital.
He operated most every day, at least one case, sometimes two. So a lot of times he didn't get home until 9, 10 o'clock at night.
Bit worried about these levels right here.
Plus, being only one of two surgeons, he was on call essentially every other night.
In the fall of 1994, David's team gets a new member, a hardworking 27-year-old nurse named Stephanie Kennedy. Bright and ambitious, Stephanie attended nursing school and then left her small working-class town in Louisiana for Hattiesburg.
She was assigned as Dr. Stevens' nurse. She maintains his case files, maintains his workload. They're together most of the day. So that relationship, a nurse-doctor relationship, is very close.
Stephanie was a very good nurse. She was very intelligent. She usually could take a situation and size it up very quickly and let the physician know what the problem was and what needed to be done. You'd have to worry about the patient if she was taking care of the patient.
She also happens to be a former pageant queen with the looks to match.
Stephanie was a very attractive brunette with beautiful eyes, nice shape. She was very vivacious, very outgoing.
Stephanie was very popular. She was tall, homecoming queen, beauty pageant contestant. So she was very sure of herself and sure of her looks.
I think she knew that she had physical assets, and she actually would dress to accentuate those assets.
But when it comes to Stephanie's personality, there's a disconnect between her Southern beauty queen facade and her behavior among friends.
She was a brassy lady. I mean, whatever that she thought, it usually came right out the mouth.
She was crude and loud. She would not be the typical lady you would find as a socialite in the South. Stephanie wanted that, but her personality didn't fit into that.
By the fall of 1994, Stephanie is beginning to feel that she isn't living up to her full potential.
She was ambitious, and she was intelligent enough probably to have gone to medical school, but she had two children and didn't have any money to do that or enough time.
She's been married to her husband, a utility worker, since she was 18, raising their two kids and working hard to make ends meet.
They didn't have memberships to the country clubs or golf courses. They didn't take vacations. They didn't have jewels or new cars. She was from a very blue-collar background.
I think when Stephanie started working in the hospital setting as a nurse and meeting successful people and seeing their lifestyle and how her lifestyle was not the same.
Everything under control?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think that's what made it click in Stephanie's head, that she wanted to be that socialite. She wanted to be the ones that she would see on TV, the wealthy wives.
But Stephanie knows these are just pipe dreams. And for the time being, she simply feels trapped. Then, in the winter of 1994, the mood at the hospital begins to shift as the professional relationship between the 52-year-old surgeon and his 27-year-old nurse deepens into something more dangerous.
Every time you come on the floor, she would just be right there.
Your work has been incredible. You've done wonderful work. Beautiful work.
Thank you, doctor.
I believe Stephanie became more impressed with David than the typical nurse-doctor relationship. I believe it got to the point that she was infatuated with him.
As for David, he relishes the attention from the beautiful young nurse.
I don't think really initially he thought anything about it, but as time went on and as her attentions became more and more amorous, he actually started becoming enamored with her. I think he liked that edginess to her. That attracted him to her.
David begins to see in Stephanie the chance to experience the wild youth he never had.
He married Karen as a young man. They had children early on, so he never experienced that part of his life where he dated a lot of different girls or had that experience with girls that may have been a little bit edgier than what Karen was.
Then, one late night in the winter of 1994, David and Stephanie find themselves alone at the hospital.
David is drawn to Stephanie because she is the opposite of his wife. So Stephanie, with her brash, outgoing personality, maybe she's not sophisticated, but that's going to be exciting to David.
She was very enticing. And when this enticement comes up day after day after day, I think your defenses get broken down over time.
For David, those defenses are finally overwhelmed. Despite the enormous risk to their marriages and careers, their lips come together in that first supercharged kiss. It isn't long before David and Stephanie cross the ultimate line, from lustful fantasy to passionate lovemaking. Suddenly, David is living out his erotic dreams, unconcerned about becoming the subject of small-town gossip that could get back to his wife.
I think Stephanie was probably extremely inventive in the bedroom. Probably David had never encountered anything like it. She was like a no-holds-barred kind of person. Anything goes with her. So I would expect that he was kind of dazzled by all that.
She probably taught him things that he only read about. She was a sex pot. His dreams were being fulfilled sexually, let me say that.
David and Stephanie have committed the utmost betrayal against their spouses. But in small-town Hattiesburg, it's only a matter of time before the rumor mill is running at full speed. And the consequences will be explosive. In early 1995, Dr. David Stevens, a heart surgeon, and Stephanie Kennedy, his much younger nurse, are doing everything they can to keep their affair a secret in the small town of Hattiesburg, Mississippi. But the risk of getting caught having sex at work only adds to the excitement. But David's body isn't the only object of Stephanie's insatiable lust. She's becoming addicted to the sense of security she finds in David's arms, something she isn't getting from her husband at home.
Stephanie was captivated by David's position. She was captivated by David's money. She was captivated by being able to obtain a heart surgeon, being able to move up that social ladder, and it consumed her. It overtook her life.
I just want 5 minutes of your time.
Okay, well, I don't have 5 minutes right now. I'm sorry. They're paging me right now. I've really got to go.
Stephanie is quickly realizing there's only one sure way to make those dreams a reality.
Ultimately, she wanted to be a doctor's wife.
And Stephanie starts turning up the pressure on David to make that happen.
When are you going to leave her?
When I have more time, we're going to sit down and spend the time to really talk about it then.
To David, a high-profile member of the Hattiesburg elite, ending his marriage to his socialite wife, Karen, is no small thing.
We will talk about this later, okay? I promise.
There's no doubt David was torn. There's no doubt he loved Karen, but I believe the temptation of the affair, the newness of the affair, was pulling him and tearing him in two.
Okay, I'll see you later.
But soon, his dirty little secret won't be his to tell. Despite all the sneaking around, David and Stephanie's affair becomes common knowledge among many of their hospital colleagues.
The affair was a rumor in the hospital. It was going around the medical community. Some people knew or suspected.
Okay, is that okay?
Okay, yeah, take that. Take that.
Tuck your shirt.
When people are having affairs, especially if they're in the throes of lust instead of love, they really miss all of the cues that are going on outside of their tunnel-visioned affair.
In a small town like Hattiesburg, it doesn't take long for the salacious news to make the rounds, until eventually it hits home. David's home. In February of 1995, just a few months into their affair, it all comes to a head.
It was obvious that Karen was suspicious. I mean, she was not blind to the rumors. She was hearing it too, and it was breaking her heart.
That's when Karen gets an unexpected phone call from David's mistress, Stephanie.
Hello?
She called. She was harassing Karen on the phone.
Stephanie?
Suddenly, all of Karen's suspicions are confirmed.
This must be some sort of joke.
As Stephanie spills the vulgar details of her affair with David, for this straight-laced, doting wife and mother, the brutal truth is simply too much to bear.
Karen may have been in denial about the rumors swirling around about her husband, but when the husband's girlfriend calls up and confirms it,
It really is a reality check.
Don't ever call here again. This is my house.
You can't deny it any longer. And in Karen's case, her entire world will come crashing down.
Karen immediately confronts David, and a vicious argument erupts. And then, in the heat of the moment, instead of denying the affair, David makes up his mind. He tells Karen he's leaving her to be with Stephanie.
You have to remember, her whole world revolved around David.
It's almost an implosion where the mind cannot wrap itself around the news that it's hearing. It's not just shock, it's a complete downward spiral.
And as she follows David out to the garage, she doesn't go empty-handed.
When she walked out into the garage, she had a gun. So David jumped behind the car door because he thought she was going to shoot him.
Put the gun down.
When paramedics arrive on the scene, they find their victim bleeding on the stairs. It's Karen, shot through the neck. She's rushed to David and Stephanie's place of work and admitted to intensive care. Meanwhile, David explains to police that in the course of the argument with Karen, she pulled out a gun and put it in her mouth.
Come back!
No, no! Don't shoot! Don't hurt yourself!
Don't leave me!
David continues to try to talk to her.
Let's go inside.
Reassure her that whatever they're going through, they can work through.
When David thought the threat had passed, he turned to get into his car.
And then he heard a gunshot and turned around and saw her lying on the carport.
And when the gun went off, it went through her spinal cord back here. Didn't go through her brain, it went back through her neck. So immediately paralyzed her, but her brain was intact.
Against all odds, it looks like Karen is going to survive, though she will never walk again. She's moved to a rehab center in Jackson, Mississippi to begin her recovery. Within a few days, she's coherent enough to communicate with detectives, and she corroborates David's story.
From what we could relay through questioning is that she was trying to scare David into staying home and that she stumbled and the gun discharged.
David's been a heart surgeon for his entire career, so he's seen his share of trauma, but there is absolutely nothing in his medical training that could prepare him for seeing his own wife shoot herself in the head.
Having almost lost the mother of his children, David is overcome with relief that Karen will pull through. But just a few weeks later, when Karen seems to be on the road to recovery, tragedy strikes again.
Karen had become accidentally disconnected from the ventilator in Jackson, and she had become brain dead.
And on April 28th, 1995, Karen dies.
What caused that ventilator to be disconnected, nobody ever really knew.
David's grief over the loss of his wife is difficult to bear, but he does find solace in Stephanie's arms.
Their relationship continued during this time and even grew stronger. It appeared that David had made some decisions that he was going to be with Stephanie.
And Stephanie also makes a decision to divorce her husband to be with David.
Once Karen died, David publicly started seeing Stephanie. They had a very open public relationship. So everyone knew that they were a couple.
We were all just kind of taken aback that he would behave like this.
David ignores what others are saying and simply goes towards Stephanie because now he's free to be with her.
And on May 11th, 1996, just 1 year after Karen's death, David and Stephanie shock Hattiesburg once again by making it official.
They married at David's home that he had shared with Karen.
It's the same house where Karen sustained the gunshot wound that ultimately took her life.
By getting married in David and Karen's marital home, David and Stephanie are sending a message. Karen is gone. Stephanie's here now. We have moved on, and you should too.
It's a provocative way to start their new life. But David and Stephanie are over the moon to be a married couple at last.
Now she's the spouse of the top surgeon here in Hattiesburg. So she's where she wanted to be.
But the newlyweds have no idea that fate is about to deal them a crushing blow, and that their scandalous beginnings will come back to haunt them.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's 1997 in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and things are finally looking up for newlyweds David and Stephanie Stevens. After a 2-year affair, the tragic death of David's wife, and Stephanie's divorce, the heart surgeon and the young nurse are ready to build a life together. It's a fresh start, and each feels fulfilled in every way by their new relationship.
Beautiful young wife who apparently is just completely anything goes kind of situation in the bedroom. So I guess for him, it was kind of reliving his youth.
By the end of the year, the couple move out of the house David shared with his former wife and into a new property.
David built a brand new house with a swimming pool.
She wanted a home that she designed for her and David and her children. She went to all extremes to build this home. It was the most expensive material, the most expensive design.
It's a really nice, nice house.
It seems as if Stephanie's fantasy life is finally coming true.
She had a nice car now. She had money. She had jewelry. And everything I think she had ever dreamt of.
Stephanie doesn't just get her Prince Charming. She gets everything that comes with the lavish lifestyle of a millionaire surgeon. This is the life of the elite that she has always wanted.
But Stephanie's castles in the air are about to come tumbling down. By 1998, 2 years into their marriage, David gets some startling news. He's tested positive for hepatitis C, a disease that attacks the liver.
David apparently had contracted it back in the early days of surgery, back when the levels of sanitation was not the same as they are today.
And his professional life unravels on the spot.
There's a problem with getting malpractice insurance because if you're hepatitis C positive, you are at risk to transmit that to patients if you happen to get cut while you're operating.
And what do I do next?
Without malpractice insurance, David can't perform surgery.
What he could do was basically just read charts and diagnose and see patients and things like that. But, you know, the world was crashing quick around him.
His self-esteem took a big hit because with him, his identity was that he was that stud heart surgeon.
Suddenly, the once prominent surgeon finds himself in a financial tailspin when his $500,000 a year paycheck is drastically cut down.
He was probably making not even 20% of what he was making before all his health issues happened.
I believe Stephanie realized that financially that things were going to change, that they would possibly have to sell the home. They would possibly have to do some lifestyle adjustments. That was her dream, and she had obtained it. Now she was losing it.
For the next 3 years, Stephanie nurses her husband as the couple does the best they can to face the challenges of David's illness. But by 2001, David's condition is worse than ever when, in addition to hepatitis C, he's diagnosed with diabetes and end-stage liver disease. Without a liver transplant, he won't live more than a few years. The news sends him spiraling into depression.
Dr. Stevens was a miserable man. You could tell he was depressed.
David's life has been turned upside down with these diagnoses. He's not just very physically ill. He's psychologically embattled. His entire identity was wrapped up in being a successful heart surgeon.
David is still able to do office work at the hospital, but his illness leaves him frequently exhausted and confined to bed. But despite their dwindling income, Stephanie scrapes together enough money to hire additional help and maintain a semblance of their formerly luxurious lifestyle.
She had house servants, she had maids, she had men to fix the pool. She would lift no finger in anything in the house. She would hire it done. And that's what she wanted. She liked that lifestyle.
One of Stephanie's recent hires is a 25-year-old man named Chris.
Chris is a small frame individual, real thin, short hair, probably about 5'6", 5'7". Chris was hired initially by David and Stephanie to fix their saltwater aquarium.
He would come about the house and wanted to see how he can make money. He would hang out long enough with Stephanie to see if she would give him some kind of job so he can get paid.
Chris and Stephanie had a good relationship. They would talk, and Chris dealt mostly with Stephanie. He did not deal with David.
According to some of the other staff, however, Chris has been known to behave inappropriately towards the lady of the house.
He was very flirtatious and very open about things. He would sit at the foot of the bed and rub her feet. It was just strange.
While Stephanie is grateful to have a cheerful young man in the house, she remains dedicated to nursing her ailing husband back to health. The young wife is optimistic that after a liver transplant, David will once again be at the top of his game. But that hope is about to be dashed forever. The morning of May 1st, 2001 is like any other morning in the Stevens household when Stephanie comes running into the kitchen, sobbing.
Stephanie comes out with her hands over her face.
Oh my God! Are you okay?
And she's in panic. I said, "What happened?" She said, "I was asleep. When I woke up, David was dead." And I said, "What? What are you talking about?"
"He's not breathing. He's not breathing."
Stephanie immediately calls a doctor friend to find out what to do. And then she calls 911. One of the first responders is the Forest County coroner.
I go in and Stephanie is sitting up in the bed and then Dr. Stevens is laying on the opposite end.
It appears that David has finally succumbed to his fatal illness.
From all indications, from the time that we got him to the funeral home, the whole scene was a natural death. I mean, there was nothing out of place.
Coroner's office, Butch Benedict, was prepared to rule the death as part of his liver failure. But as protocol calls, he had his deputy draw the blood and send it to the crime lab for toxicology analysis.
On May 5th of 2001, David Stevens is laid to rest. For now, all Stephanie can do is mourn the death of her husband and all that she's lost with his passing.
Stephanie's fairy tale marriage to David may have had its ups and downs, but in truth, she really loved her husband. And when he dies, this is genuinely devastating to her.
But the story of the death of Dr. David Stevens doesn't end here. Weeks later, the routine toxicology report comes in, and it contains one unexpected result.
Yeah, this is Butch.
Get a phone call from the crime lab that says, Butch, there's a question about this blood on Dr. Stevens. A toma date was found in the system, and I'm like, what is that?
It turns out etomidate is a drug commonly used in hospitals to put patients to sleep before surgery.
Get back to you. Thanks.
And then that's when Rusty comes over and we start discussing some of the things that we need to do and how we're going to approach this.
Well, the boys from lab called and said that they found traces of etomidate.
What is that? I never heard of that.
Toxicologist tells him this is very strange. You don't see this in patients that are at home, that you usually see this in patients that have died during surgery.
It's a drug they use in surgery. It's a sedative.
If they use it in surgery, they can only get that in hospitals.
But David hasn't set foot in the OR in years, either as a surgeon or a patient.
I don't know if I've got a homicide, if I've got a suicide, if I've got an accident. I don't know. I just know that something is not right, that David did not just die a natural death. Something's going on here.
Did David accidentally overdose? Did depression push him over the edge, leading him to take his own life? Or is there something more sinister at play? It's May of 2001 in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Stephanie Stevens is devastated after she finds her husband David, a former heart surgeon, dead in their bed.
She told me that she got up that morning and fixed her daughter's hair, and that once she got the kids off to school, she went back and laid down next to David, and then awoke about 1 o'clock and found him deceased.
David Stevens appears to have died of natural causes, but when the anesthetic etomidate turns up in his blood, detectives are stumped.
That shouldn't even be in his system. That's a drug that's usually administered for some type of surgery or procedure.
Further research reveals that etomidate alone would have put him to sleep, but would not have killed him. Investigators decide to take a closer look at the circumstances surrounding David's death.
So I had to determine several things. One, how did he die? And two, how the etomidate got into his system.
The investigation next turns up a critical detail about David's treatment.
He had been placed on insulin and was later supplied with an insulin pump to help regulate his insulin on a daily basis.
Detectives now wonder, is it possible that David was so depressed that he used his insulin pump to dose himself with a fatal cocktail of drugs? There's only one way to find out, to exhume David's body, buried just a few weeks prior.
So we knew at that point we had to do a full autopsy to determine the cause of death.
The results from David's autopsy come in.
During the autopsy, we was able to obtain specimens from the actual injection point of the insulin pump. And that's when a second anesthetic was found, atricurium. Now at that point, I'm like, okay, what is this?
With a second drug discovered in David's body, his death suddenly becomes much more suspicious. Atricurium, it turns out, is also used in surgery, but this drug causes patients to stop breathing. The atricurium levels in David's system are through the roof. And it's now clear this is what killed him. But then, why would there also be etomidate in his system, which would have only put him to sleep?
If David wanted to commit suicide, he could have potentially put the atricurium in and killed himself, but then there wouldn't be any etomidate in his system.
That means someone else must have injected the etomidate that put him to sleep and then administered the atricurium to kill him.
David could not administer the second drug to himself after he gave himself the first drug. And I knew then that for sure that I did not have a suicide.
What he has is a clear case of murder. But the only person in the house who knew how to operate the insulin pump was Stephanie. And as a hospital nurse, she also had easy access to the cocktail of drugs that killed him.
We just had them on a shelf back in our anesthesia closet where we would just go and get what we needed. So anybody could walk back there and get it. They knew what they were looking for. And Stephanie had full access to the operating room.
Investigators now consider a new possibility, that David, overcome with depression, asked Stephanie to help him commit suicide. But when detectives questioned David's friends and colleagues about his state of mind just before he died, a different picture emerges.
I think he was a little down about his situation, but he continued to be fairly chipper and came in and did his stuff and joked around with everybody.
They knew he was sick, but he was prepared to fight that battle and get better. He was very excited about getting ready for his liver transplant, and he was wanting to get his body in shape for the transplant. He was not preparing to end his life. He was preparing the new beginning of his life.
David's upbeat attitude, his determination to keep himself healthy, is simply not indicative of suicidal ideations.
So if David had no intention of killing himself, then Stephanie could not have snuffed out his life at his request, but only for reasons of her own. With Stephanie now the prime suspect, investigators soon discover she may have had the motive, as well as the means, to murder her husband.
David was not wealthy cash-wise at the time of his death, but he was extremely wealthy in annuities and in trust funds and stocks and bonds and things of that nature.
And much of that money went directly to Stephanie when David died. To top it off, the coroner recalls that on the day of the murder, Stephanie tampered with the one thing that could have tied her to the crime, David's insulin pump.
You know, I've never seen this before. I have no idea what she's doing. And she takes the batteries and the vials out. But later I found out that, you know, you can erase a memory and you know, there's no telling what was in those vials.
And with those vials went any trace of the drugs that killed David. So far, there's no hard evidence Stephanie Stevens murdered her husband in cold blood. But this grieving widow is harboring a dangerous stash of secrets, including the horrific truth behind David's death. It's July 2002, and for the past year, investigators in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, have strongly suspected that Dr. David Stevens was murdered by his wife, Stephanie. But with no evidence, they can't make an arrest. And then, out of the blue, detectives hear some interesting news through the grapevine.
I was able to learn that she was actually having an intimate relationship with her handyman, Chris.
It's the same man that she and David employed before David's death.
Stephanie is still in her 30s. She's beautiful, young, and hot, and obviously going to fall for Chris's attention. Chris is going to see Stephanie's situation as the land of opportunity.
And it looks like Stephanie and Chris have been taking advantage of that opportunity since before David died.
There was a relationship developing between Stephanie and Chris at the time of David's death.
But that's not all.
Investigators also learned that less than a year after David's death, the couple tied the knot in true Sin City style.
She and Chris go to Vegas and take a bunch of their friends for a classic Vegas wedding. Casinos, partying, drinking.
While they were in Las Vegas partying, Stephanie had spent $80,000 of an annuity that had been given to her after David's death.
But even her new marriage and spendthrift ways aren't enough to get Stephanie charged and behind bars. Investigators decide to make a last-ditch effort to get any useful information on Stephanie by talking to everyone who knows her. In August of 2002, they come across Karen, one of the friends Stephanie and Chris partied with in Vegas, who also happened to be a witness at their wedding.
I just need a minute of your time. I need to ask you a couple of questions, okay?
Yeah.
To their astonishment, Karen reveals a startling confession Stephanie made during their decadent time together.
He was just really depressed and he was sick and he wanted to die, so I helped him.
She told me that Stephanie told her she did it, that she killed David because David asked her to, because he was depressed and he, you know, didn't want to suffer.
How did she do it?
Something with an insulin pump.
It looks like Stephanie's casual remark has provided a critical piece of the puzzle. And on September 12, 2002, Stephanie Stevens is arrested and charged with first-degree murder. Investigators can now paint a picture of what really happened to David Stevens.
In the beginning, Stephanie and David's romance is very real. The fairy tale dreams, the hot sex, it all becomes true, except that Stephanie's love for David is inextricably linked to his money.
So when David fell ill and his sky-high income plummeted, the new life Stephanie had dreamed of for so long vanished.
I think she, in her way, sized it up very quickly that he was much more valuable dead than alive.
Stephanie chose May 1st, 2001 to carry out her diabolical plan. First, she prepared David's insulin pump, but instead of filling the cartridge with insulin, she used a vial of the anesthetic Atomidate.
When you administer the Atomidate, you become very sleepy and just go into a deep sleep.
Almost immediately, the drug took effect.
And while he was under the influence of the Atomidate, she initiated another bolus of Atricurium.
This slowed down David's breathing.
So she had the foresight to actually put him to sleep before she gave him the deadly anesthetic that would kill him.
Finally, his breathing stopped, followed by his heart. And in a matter of seconds, Dr. David Stevens was dead. On September 8, 2003, 2 years after his death, the case goes to trial. Stephanie pleads not guilty. Despite her confession to her friend Karen, her defense argues that David took his own life by injecting the fatal drugs himself.
The defense was trying to paint a picture of a man that was suicidal, that did not want to live anymore. But at the end of the day, when you look at all the evidence, when you look at David's life and the days prior to his death, there was no other way to go but homicide.
It takes the jury only 90 minutes to come to a decision. On September 15th, 2003, they find Stephanie Stevens guilty of first-degree murder.
I think Stephanie was very calculating, very intelligent, and when she saw his status slipping and the money going away because he wasn't working like he was, the next best thing was for him to be dead and for her to have what was left of the money. In her mind, he was probably going to die anyway, so she kind of rationalized it.
Stephanie really believed till the end that she would get away with David's murder, that there was no way nobody could believe that she administered these drugs to kill him. But it didn't work. The jury saw through that, and justice was served.
Thank you.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.